This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Just why is Turkey so keen to thaw its frosty relations with Saudi Arabia? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Will Bain, in for Victoria Craig. Thanks for joining us. Yes, it's a question on the lips of many this morning as the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, arrives in Turkey. It's the first time the Saudi leader has visited the country since the murder in Turkey of a Saudi journalist and critic of his regime, Jamal Khashoggi. At the time of Mr. Khashoggi's assassination in 2018, the Turkish government was furious, with President Erdogan laying the blame squarely at the door of the Saudi government. So why the sudden thawing of relations? As the BBC's William Armstrong in Istanbul explained, it's all about cold, hard cash.
The country is going through pretty significant economic turbulence at the moment. The currency is continuing to decline. Inflation is sky high. And there's an impression that Turkey's kind of broader regional normalization efforts with a range of actors, including Saudi Arabia, are motivated, at least in part, by this economic interest.
So kind of cold, hard business, really, trumping any emotions left over from the shocking murder of the Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi in Turkey.
Yes, indeed. There's a sense of this pragmatism taking the stage once again. You're seeing in programme media reports, there's a newspaper here, Türkiye, and they were citing deals in energy, petrochemicals, technology, transport, health, financial services, agriculture, food, tourism. Particularly on the Turkish side, there's this interest in a potential deal on a currency swap line, which could, in theory, help restore Turkey's diminished foreign currency reserves.
President Erdogan had been very pointed in his criticism of Saudi Arabia and the Saudi Arabian government. There's even been ongoing trials around the Khashoggi case in Turkey. I understand those have all been paused now. Is that it, do you think?
Yes, that rhetoric has really halted in recent months. And indeed, the case that you mentioned that was ongoing in Istanbul, 26 defendants being tried in absentia, that case was pretty much wrapped up in April. The court ruled to transfer it to Saudi Arabia. And within a couple of weeks, Erdogan was visiting Saudi Arabia. He met King Abdullah there, and he also met the Crown Prince bin Salman. It just goes to show that Erdogan is ultimately a pragmatic figure who, when necessary, can make these U-turns.
The BBC's William Armstrong in Istanbul. Thanks so much for that.
You're welcome.
Turning to some of the numbers now, and all eyes in the UK have been on the latest inflation data report out this morning, another 40-year high as the rate crept up to 9.1%. In 4 months' time, the Soccer World Cup will be well underway in Qatar. In fact, both the United States and England will have already played their first matches. But ever since the Gulf nation was awarded the tournament, it's been dogged by controversy, particularly around the treatment of migrant workers who form the vast majority of the labour force building the stadiums and the infrastructure for the competition. The BBC's Alex Capstick has been to Doha to speak to one of those workers.
Dinner is being prepared in an apartment just outside the main commercial centre in Doha. I've come here to talk to a Filipino migrant worker who we're calling Richard. It's not his real name. He doesn't want the company he works for to know he's spoken to us.
I'm almost 15 years here in Qatar, working in the construction sector. I just came here to earn money for my family. But I need to speak out. Like, for example, the last year, many times, 3 months, he gave only 50%. After next month, no salary again, he gave only 500 rial. Oh, it's hard.
So when you hear the Supreme Committee and the government talk about all the reforms that they've made here, what are you feeling?
I'm sad, because that is not true what's happening in the ground.
Costa Rican fans celebrating outside the Ahmed bin Ali Stadium in Qatar last week. Like all construction projects in Qatar, it was built by immigrant workers. And while it's acknowledged conditions have improved in recent years, there are still lots of people like Richard who feel exploited. Ambet Yusen is General Secretary of the International Builders Union, the BWI.
The new labour reforms, introduction of non-discriminatory wages, health and safety regulations are positive development. But unscrupulous employers do not comply and are not being held into account.
Organisers insist progress has been made.
I'm Fatma Naimi. I'm the Communications and Media Executive Director at the Supreme Committee. We received a lot of criticism, actually, and a lot of that. But I mean, like, we have been always open to criticism. We welcome the constructive criticism on board, and we worked with international bodies to see how we can actually progress. It's a journey.
Despite those assurances from Qatar and FIFA, as the country prepares to welcome fans from around the globe, workers feel sidelined. Richard says he's one of thousands of labourers who are being sent away on unpaid leave for 4 months around the World Cup without any guarantees there'll be a job to come back to.
The BBC's Alex Capstick reporting from Doha in Qatar there. Well, the World Cup, of course, has moved from its usual summer slot to the winter, but another staple of summertime is back for the first time since the pandemic and is ready to belatedly celebrate its 50th birthday. The Glastonbury Music Festival attracts the biggest names in music and hundreds of thousands of fans as well. And for the first time since 2020, they're back on the site in southwest England, as is the BBC's Colin Patterson.
The sound of a cherry picker putting the final touches to the lighting on the pyramid stage here at Glastonbury. Around 200,000 people will descend on Worthy Farm. Last year, Andrew and Ashley Peace had a Glastonbury-themed wedding and were due to have their honeymoon at the festival until it was postponed because of COVID. They are thrilled to be finally going.
I'm like a child in December when he count down my days, so when it got to June, I started chalking my days off.
It's been a long wait, hasn't it?
Yeah, and pray the weather gods with us.
There's been a late addition to the bill. Kalush Orchestra, the Ukrainian winners of Eurovision, will play the Truth Stage on Saturday at the very Glastonbury time of 1:10 in the morning.
Yeah, nice late night for Colin Patterson there, readying himself for the weekend. Paul McCartney, of course, for Beatles fame, one of the headliners. As usual, my invitation from the BBC seems to have gone missing. So, stuck in London, I'm Will Bain with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.